The Triathlon Show 266. Hey, what's up everybody? Welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and first of all, I hope that you've had a really, really wonderful Christmas. On today's episode, I interview Joakim Villén, who is a triathlon coach from Sweden. He's himself a former professional triathlete and Olympian, and he's the head coach of the high school triathlon program Motala Rikstriathlon Gymnasium, which has the objective of developing the up-and-coming top talents of Swedish triathlon. But previous graduates of the program also includes in its Hall of Fame, so to say, somebody like Vasco Vilasa, who is still coached by Joakim and who took a surprise, very impressive second place in the ITU Triathlon World Championships in Hamburg in 2020, just behind Vincent Louis, who won the World Championships. So in this episode, we discuss things like long-term athlete developing, coaching young athletes, and the basics of triathlon performance, how to build it from the ground up, which you have to do when you're starting with young athletes, and what it takes to get to the top level, because obviously the ultimate goal would be for these athletes to go on and become elite professional triathletes, and typically on the draft legal Olympic pathway. And although a lot of the episode is about developing young athletes and triathlon on the elite pathway, the Olympic pathway, we do get into advice for age groupers and also some training philosophy, training methodology that applies to everybody. So there's something here for everybody, I'm sure, and I hope that you will enjoy the interview. But before that, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. If you are doing a lot of indoor training this time of year and you find that you are sweating a lot, then chances are that you might be losing a fair amount of sodium, in particular if your training is intense or long in duration. One thing that you should do if you haven't already done so is to go to precisionhydration.com and get a free hydration plan, because that way you can get a good ballpark estimate for how much sodium you actually lose in your sweat. And that has been validated against medical grade equipment measurements. So it'll be a great starting point. And if you find that you, in particular, that you lose a good amount of sodium in your sweat, then definitely thinking about how to replace that in your training is pretty important when it comes to performance in your workouts, but also recovery from one workout to the next. And the more you train, the higher the volume, the more important this becomes. You can get your Precision Hydration electrolytes for 15% off with the promo code THATTRIATHLONSHOW15 on precisionhydration.com. And thank you to Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Roka are the world-leading manufacturers of wetsuits, trisuits, swimskins, goggles, high-performance eyewear, and prescription glasses and sunglasses. And in those latter categories, they have some really cool new features available that I mentioned last week as well. Roka can now add blue light blocking coating on any pair of eyeglasses. This does not change your glasses in any other way than it blocking the blue wavelengths of light that is emitted from screens, and that can make it more difficult to fall asleep and have sleep be more disrupted and not as deep and high quality. So a very important thing in this day and age, check that out, an exciting new option in the eyewear category. And also, if you are preparing for the new racing season and you are looking to get more opportunities to race, hopefully, than we had in 2020, then maybe it's time to look over your triathlon wardrobe and equipment bag. Do you have your wetsuit that you want to for the 2021 races? Do you have a trisuit and swimskin if you're going to be racing in Kona, for example? A swimskin would be really great to have. So check out those things. Roka has really superb options in all of those categories, which is why they're trusted by some of the best triathletes on the planet. You can get 20% off your Roka order with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Coach Joakim Villén. Welcome to That Triathlon Show. Joachim, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Michael. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. Why don't you start by introducing yourself a little bit and tell us more about your background in the sport and your current role and so on, so the listeners get to know you a bit more.
Yeah. My name is Joachim Villén, and I work as a coach, teacher at Motala Triathlon Gymnasium. That's a place where youth and juniors can combine high school studies, I think it is, in America or Portugal, with their triathlon training. And we have a group of 12 to 16 athletes. Right now we have a really good group, ambitious and fantastic in all ways. And before I started to coach, I started out as a swimmer, and from that I transitioned into triathlon. And about junior age, and as a triathlete, I was very interested in training and psychology. So when I stopped triathlon at 2005, and I got the opportunity by a good friend of mine to start at this triathlon gymnasium, Michael Torren, it felt pretty, neutral or good. And during this time, I have been studying elite coaching and teaching. And I have been here now for 15 years this year.
Yeah, that's a nice milestone, getting out to 15 years. And you went to the Sydney Olympics as an athlete, didn't you?
Yeah, back in the days, 2000, I managed to qualify to the Sydney Olympics. It was a great experience. I mean, it was a fantastic games, and it was good times.
Mm. And with the group that you're coaching at Motala, so as you say, it's high school level, so from roughly 15 to 18 years old, more or less, and that's the focus. There is to the Olympic pathway, so to say. So short course draft legal racing is the primary focus.
Yeah, they 15, 16, and then they have the opportunity to do the studies on 4 years. So they are 20 when they leave us. And as you say, we go short course, more or less, yeah.
Mm. And one impressive point on your CV that I also want to point out is that you coach Vasco Vilaça, who's very familiar to us here in Portugal, for getting second at the ITU World Championships in Hamburg behind Vincent Louis this year in 2020. So can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. Vasco started us at 2015, and since that I have me and Marcus, who is the swim coach at the gymnasium. We are two coaches, me and Marcus, so we are two about that. Then we have followed Vasco and his in his sport, and for 2 years now, I think he's in Linköping, and I still coach him, and together with Anders Holmes, which is his swimming coach right now.
Great. So can we discuss a bit around your coaching and training principles? What are the things that you consider to be the most important things when it comes to triathlon training or triathlon coaching?
As a coach, I think about the culture and the environment a lot, trying to create something where good, ambitious athletes want to be, that they feel safe, and also trying to create a lot of curiosity, how to become better and how to solve problems, and if there is obstacles, how do we take us beyond the obstacles? So the creating the environment is very important for me. Second to that, I guess it's just creating good relationships with the athletes, like getting to know them and understand them and see what they need and how to respond to training, monitor the training, and of course give support and trying to challenge them as well. And last but of course, we want to create a really good daily training quality, so to speak, like with consistency, right load at the right time, and on an individual level.
It's really good that you bring up things such as culture and encouraging the athletes and or building an environment where the athletes are encouraged to take ownership and be problem solvers, because those are the types of things that are, I guess, difficult or impossible to quantify. So I think a lot of athletes and even coaches may underestimate the importance of those, but it's that old adage of just because you can measure it doesn't mean it's important. And the reverse also applies, that something that you can't measure can still be very, very important. And definitely something that I haven't discussed that much on this podcast in the past necessarily, so I think it's really good that it comes up here. But absolutely, those are some really key skills, and I think especially what resonates with me there is when it comes to the problem solving. I think any athlete in their career is going to come run into challenges, obstacles, and setbacks, and knowing how to deal with that, learning how to deal better with that is really what might set a successful athlete apart from somebody who doesn't make it at the level that they could have otherwise done.
Yeah, right on point. Like the ownership and also handling success and failure, as you say, like Vasco, if it's going overboard, if it's going very fast forward, you can lose it and make the wrong choice. But as well as you say, with mistakes, if you keep on doing them over and over and again, with juniors, you need to let them do mistakes because they're not ready. It's a big training camp until they get to senior level or senior competition. But they need to at least do less in some how over the years. Yeah.
Can you give some specific example on how you A, create the right culture, and B, create an environment where the athletes are allowed to to overcome challenges and be problem solvers? What would some specific examples be of those two things?
Good culture, I think the baseline from that is like safety and curiosity. And safety is like you need to have a stable coach, stable environment that you know that this is it. This is our values. This is how we do things. We have kind of we know what our vision is, and we are holding ourselves accountable to that. Honesty is crucial, but of course, I mean, joy and doing it together is also really big cornerstones.
Yeah, and you mentioned there getting the training load right and the consistency aspect of it, and this leads into the following question, which is around long-term athlete development. So how do you view long-term athlete development from the perspective of the group of athletes you're coaching that come to you when they're around 15 years old? What's the progression there? How do you make sure that they can stay consistent? Can you elaborate a bit on that?
We need to take approach like coach them for a career and not for a year, and prepare them for senior training. Today, maybe you see too much senior training on junior level. So we are very, consistency also comes in here. If we start with an athlete and we see where the athlete is right now and just take one small step forward. And we are doing development, so we will maybe get some obstacles, but then we take a step back. But then we take, then we know that, and we can keep that. We do that we can keep over long periods of time. And I mean, we also need to leave room for development. Like we cannot take out all the training as juniors. We need to leave so they can still develop at 25 years, which is very hard to find things that we can continue to make development at that age.
So when it comes to the question of training volume, and I know that's not everything that we're going to discuss here, but in terms of volume, where might the athletes be starting out when they come to you during the first year, and where might they end up in the last year, whether it's they do the high school over 3 or 4 years? What is, just as examples, obviously it can vary depending on the athlete.
Yeah, as you say, it's a small sport in Sweden, so it varies a lot, but we have everything from 8 to 10 hours and maybe 10 to 12, I would say. A couple of athletes like Gabriel Sander and Vasco Vilaka and Andreas Karlsson, they came in with a little different, they have come a longer way in their background, so they may be a little bit higher. And then we just follow.
This is 8 to 10 or 10 to 12 is for the first year.
For the first year, yeah. So we see that they can be consistent on that, and then it's very individual how they respond to the training. Like if they are robust and can go forward a little bit faster than you maybe would say that the norm is, but if we. If I take an example, like a boy who is in the third grade right now, he started at 8-10, and now he's sneaking at 18 to 20 years, 20 hours a week training.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the fourth year, if they. They around 20 to 25, yeah.
Mm. And what about things like technical aspects of the three disciplines? How might that change from year 1 to year 4? Is there more of a focus on that earlier and then it becomes more of the physiological development later, or is it fairly similar across the entire time with you at Motala? What does that look like?
First we're trying to get them fit, so form first, I would say. So we try to get the volume and the frequency up, and then we see the technique develops as well. But and we maybe not super keen on like drills, if we say that is technique. We do like accelerations or hills or sprints. That's our technique base that we do. We still do it in the continuous moving, so to speak.
Yeah.
Then we do some drills, but that is not important. We try to do hills and acceleration, and then maybe give them some cues or feedback on that, and that we see is enough. And we keep doing the acceleration and the hills, and the things we see there, it's that it keeps ticking the technique year by year, kind of.
Yeah. And finally, in terms of intensity, how does that develop over the years?
You mean the the sessions, the how big the intensity
things like how big the intense sessions are, how many of them you might be doing, and like how big a proportion of the overall training it might be.
Yeah, exactly. We're quite low on the intensity sessions to the start, so they go in the first year they're youth, and second and third year they're juniors, and the last year they are U23. So we start to look at 20 minutes if you're talking about some kind of threshold work, if you use that name, medium intensity, they're around 20 minutes. And if you look at the higher intensity, we maybe do in the early stage of base training 6 times 30 seconds hills on the speed side. And as a junior, you pick it up to 30 minutes of medium intensity, and then you go to maybe 8 hills as a junior, and at U23 they go to 40 minutes, and then they have 10 minutes more when they're seniors, and then you have those 50 to 70 minutes as a senior, where a medium, so to speak, session should be for a senior athlete.
So when you said earlier that you see a lot of youth and junior programs being looking too much like senior programs, does that refer to both the overall volume and the amount of intensity, how big the sessions are in terms of intensity in them, or what are the specific things that go wrong that you see in some junior programs when they train too much like seniors?
I don't know for sure, but depend on which group you look at, but mostly I think it's too much intensity in the junior age and too much specific training. I think there should be more, like I said, more to volume and frequency and small doses of intensity, so they can handle more intensity when they get older.
Yeah, and you also mentioned they're still having room to grow when you're in your early 20s and not maximizing it all in 2 years, but which makes sense to me, because then like it's a much bigger risk than actually leaving a bit of room to grow, and potentially you can grow your ceiling higher than what you could otherwise if you try to do it too quickly.
And you build solid athletes, so they can handle this harder or more, maybe not more, but the bigger medium intensity and specific training later on.
So other than the things already mentioned here, are there any other kind of advice that you would give to athletes of this age that might be listening, in terms of things that they should and should not be doing?
As always, it takes longer time than you think, especially at that age. You want to be as good as you can tomorrow, but if you want to be as good as you can, it's going to take, like you know the science, like 10 years or something like that before you become really good. And I think also, as we said about the environment, I think it's good to put yourself in a good environment where you see youth or juniors or seniors consistently develop and do good results, and maybe that it's not too much injuries, but just good development over time with both girls and boys, and mostly that they become good as seniors.
And if we go into some more specifics around the training, could you give us an overview of what a typical training week might look like in your squad?
As I said, they have a student in the first grade, maybe start on two swims, two bikes, two runs, and if they have a bit more of a swimming background, they maybe start at four swims and two bikes and two runs and so on. But we're trying to put we have very good swimming facilities, so we try to work a bit around the swimming. So I would say that's it in year one, and then we just try to put on another bike and another run and another swim as we see as they can, and don't get any holes in the training during 1 year. So then you, when you're year three, you're gonna have like 4 or 5 in each discipline, the intensity sessions are quite stable, or they are 2 in each disciplines, but like I said before, smaller and becoming bigger as you progress.
Yeah. So if we talk about somebody in let's say their third or fourth year, where would those sessions be within the week, and this kind of describe what they might be. For example, we can talk about this time of year, we're in recording this early December, so what kind of intensity are you working on right now?
In year three, we can take the boy as I talked about before. He has, due to Corona, he just have 5 swims, but he can do 6. He's a very strong biker, so we limit that to 4, and putting on another on the run, so he has 5 runs. And on that year, he has 2 smaller strength sessions, like with a bar, but mostly technical stuff. Right now we are in early base. We just done the first base period, so we transition into some, if we take the run, we do some hills, and we starting usually at 6 hills, and then we have the building of the tempo progression run is another one. And on the bike, we have a bit of when you increase the speed from 1 to 3 in shorter intervals.
Progression?
Yeah, progression. Let's say it's 18 times 30 seconds, and we do that easy, medium, hard several times.
Yeah.
And then also the basic tempo, we start at 15 minutes, and if he's in year 3, he stops at 30 to 35 minutes, and building the speed over that time there. Yeah. And yeah. And the swim also the same pattern, almost like longer thresholds around 2000 meters and some speed like 50 or 75 meters, even pace or progressions, 1 to 3. Yeah.
Mm. And how might this look when we hopefully have a bit of a racing season around next spring, next summer?
Yeah, that would be good.
what would that week look like at that point?
The last 4 weeks before, or
when we're in basically close to racing.
Close to racing, yeah. Then we probably are on the track and doing some track workouts on the run. Instead of straight tempos, we probably do break it down to broken medium runs. On the bike, it's a lot of time trialing, a lot. Once a week, the other session on the bike is a longer race pace tempo kind of workout. and then the swim follow the same, like more race pace. Yeah.
Yeah. And then for the kind of endurance sessions that are not the intense sessions, can you describe them a bit more? For example, how do you prescribe them? Is it just an endurance, easy or steady feeling, or do you have heart rate targets or pace or power targets for your athletes? How long are they? Like, do you do anything like long runs, or what is a long run or a long ride for this group of athletes?
Mm-hmm. We mostly go by feel. So we start at easy, medium, hard, kind of. And that's also depending on the session. So you should always end the session in good form, not breaking the technique, for that's a crucial part. If you break the technique in each ending of the session, you kind of mix with your technique, I think. Then we're trying to find what's best for the athlete. But we also use pacers, like the older athletes need to know. They know the pace they do on the tempo progression runs, and then we just put the younger people on that train, so to speak. And so we're very controlled on the medium and on the harder sessions. It doesn't have to go too fast. And on the easy runs, we usually say that we cannot go slow enough. Or it can go very slow, depending on the feel of the day. Of course, you have different power profiles, like a diesel can maybe go a little bit faster on the easy days, maybe even if you say somewhere in between medium and easy. But if you maybe a bit more power profile, you need to keep the easy days really easy. But overall, it's better to start choosing the easy pace for quite a long time, maybe a year, just to see how it turns out.
Yeah, and what about the duration of the longest workouts? How long runs might you build up to, and long rides?
Long runs would be they starting on 45 minutes and. They go up maybe to 80 or 90 minutes if they can do that. And on the bike, they do. We start on 2 hours, and year one and two stops on 3 hours, and then they go 4 and 5 hours in year three or four. But we also, like Vasco, this was his first year with double runs, and then a double run day can be like a run of 25Ks, and then another small run of 30 minutes with 6K, and then you have like 31K on one day.
Yeah. And if we go into some specific advice for the different disciplines, just if you have a couple of ideas, suggestions for how to train effectively in each of swimming, biking, and running, and starting with swimming, what would a couple of key points be for effective swim training?
It differs. If you have a good swimming background, you can, of course, do less and keep that energy to develop the bike and the run. But if you're not a swimmer, which most triathletes, I mean real swimmers, they are can be very good triathlon swimmers, but you can back off. But if you're not a swimmer, you need to, you cannot take breaks. You need to have swimming all the year around until you lift it, so to speak. That becomes stable, and then it's crucial to not take breaks. If we look at the progression there, we start easy, but and not now in Corona times, we try to build up to 30K a week really from year two and three. We try to hit 30K a week in an average. So that means that you some weeks have 25 and some weeks 35. Otherwise, it's the variation, like we spoke about, from the base training to the race pace, early season, small stimulus of speed and threshold. So if you use that term and the medley, and then the variation becomes open water instead of medley and longer speed and medium intensity.
What is the reasoning for using medley?
It just developed technique and the overall water feel. Like you see swimmers, they can handle all the strokes very well. And the base for a swimming youth mostly goes to medley, and then maybe they can choose the stroke when they become older. But I just think it's developed overall water awareness and technique for freestyle, and of course you get the pressure of only swimming freestyle as well. The load on the shoulders and all the other, but that's in the base. That then you, as a triathlete, of course, must leave that, because you don't swim as a swimmer as much as a swimmer. So, when you get closer to race season, you need to do as much freestyle as you can. But still, in the base, it's good, a good variation. What we think and what we've been seeing. Yeah.
Yeah, and how important is open water swim training?
It can, I mean, you develop good swimmers in the pool, and but of course it can make small differences, but where you need to start and how to run the buoy, but that's just small adjustments compared to developing a good swimmer. I think the world championship in open water swimming is a pool swimmer. So the swimming is the most important. And if it's really difficult conditions like waves and small stuff like that, tactical or technical, you maybe need to adjust to those, but not very important now.
Mm. And can you give a similar overview or some thoughts around general thoughts around bike training?
Yeah, the bike is mostly time in the saddle, I think. That's the easiest part, almost, as long as you're not too afraid going around corners or going downhill, then you need to develop that. But it's mostly based on strength. Hills, yeah.
Yep.
We do a lot of hills on the bike that we see is good for triathlon. So you come off the bike pretty fresh or good, solid to have a good run off the bike.
Are you able to bike outdoors most of the year, you're not in the very cold parts of Sweden, of course, but you still might get snow, and you still might get periods where it's freezing or sub-freezing, and at least like slippery conditions on the roads. How much are you forced to maybe train indoors on the indoor trainer?
That's the tough part. I mean, when it's going around zero, they do 5 sessions a week or 10 hours a week on indoor trainer.
Do you think that builds some mental toughness in the athletes?
Hard to say. I would bike outdoor if we could. Then I see that we can sometimes do very good controlled interval sessions indoor. And the things with Swift can also have be a fun part, but they understand it that they need to bike and we cannot bike outside. So we the biggest difference is almost the drive of the paddles. Like, you don't have any micro pauses indoor, so you get quite good at just paddling. And outdoor, you always have, it's not totally flat, so you can kind of ease off and ease on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know for sure now.
And when you mentioned hills, how long hills do you have available, and how do you use those hills?
That's a very good question. We have we live on the flatland in Sweden, so it's not very hilly, but we have two hills. One short and steep, it's almost 15%. It takes about 3 minutes. And we do that, or we extend it, but then we do, we start further away. So 1 minute becomes 1 minute before the hill, and then 3 minutes up the hill. And if we do 5 minutes, we do 1 minute before the hill, 3 minutes up the hill, and 1 minute after the hill. And then we have a hill or a slope, or two hills, maybe you could say, that is 6 minutes. And yeah, that's what we use for our hill training. So when we come to that training, we know where we're going. And they have done it in the same hills every 4 years. Yeah.
So when you're using those two hills, the 3 minute and the 6 minute hill, would the steeper one, the 3 minute hill, be, you would do some more maximal, like VO2 max type of efforts, 5 times 3 minutes, or does it depend? Could you also do more like 10, 12 reps of more moderate threshold like intensity? Basically the question is, does the duration of the hill impact on how you choose which intensity you use in the workout?
No, but both are medium in the preparation and the base. And the last bit, we don't do the hills, and then we do the time trialing, as I said, and then flat tempo riding. Okay. So we try to transit from getting the strength from the hills and the last bit to the races, we do it on the flat.
Got it.
And then the intensity goes up on that part.
Yeah. Mm. And running, finally, what's your overview on that?
Same as that, maybe as a bike, a lot of hills, but I would say it's more like towards healthy, that we don't do everything we can to stay uninjured, because if it's happened on running, it takes quite a long time to get back into running. So mainly we do the things that keep us healthy, but also a lot of hills in the base and tempo runs that build strength. Yeah.
What would the breakdown be of if you have somebody who is training, let's say they're training 15 hours per week, how many of those hours might be running versus swimming versus cycling, just as a very rough example?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, if you take this boy again, he's trying to swim right now, though, with the corona and limited swim time, 25 to 30K a week, and doing 10 hours on the bike. And he does 5 runs, but he's in the beginning of that, so it's quite modest. I mean, it's 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah. All right. And one more question is around doing things like running off the bike, brick workouts. Do you use that much, or or and if you do, how, when and how would you use that?
Not a lot, but they still do like swim, bike, run 4 days a week, but with pause,
yeah,
in between, like different sessions, and so not much in base or preparation, but in the last run towards the races, we do a short transition work just to get the feel of the first K on the run, and so they can feel how it feels.
Yeah. One thing I want to come back to around the intensity discussion we had is you mentioned that a lot of it is controlled, and that is a key aspect to it. When it comes to swimming, is that the same there? Because swimming, especially in a group environment, more often tends to be you do often have a lot of quite high or all-out intensity, yeah, in there, depending on what type of training you're doing. But how do you view that? What is your swimming looking like from that perspective?
No, I agree what you're saying. Like I'm not the swim coach right now. Like we have Marcus and Anders, but just like you say, they have more in the easy. Like I would go on the bike and the run, the easy. There is more on the endurance side. It's more the easy is more in between medium and easy, and it's also more high intensity because I don't know, but you can do it on the swimming. So it's more sprints and a little bit higher intensity overall when you do this progression 1-3 50s. Of course, it's quite high intensity on the third one. Yeah. Mm. And it's a little bit above bike and running, I would say.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, on average, it is more intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it comes to mental skills, development of the psychology of the athlete, what are your thoughts around that? Is that something that comes from the athlete primarily themselves, or is that something that you can help as a coach with? And how? Yeah. How do you view the mental skills development?
The mental skills, yeah, they have. Every athlete comes with a background, so of course there are athletes that believe a lot in themselves and believe a little bit less in themselves. And how we work around that is, or how I think about that, I think it's crucial for us coaches to make the athletes succeed in training and in racing, and from that you develop self-esteem and become a stronger athlete. If you put your athletes in too many situations where they fail, that's going to take a toll on the self-esteem, I think.
Mm. Do you see any difference between the girls and the boys?
Good question. Not really. I would say maybe how they handle it, but I mean, boys go quiet, and maybe girls go a little bit more outspoken, depending on if you succeed or fail. No, success builds strong mentally athletes. Yeah.
Mm. What do you think are the things that you would advise age group athletes, amateur athletes? What would you advise them in terms of just generally becoming better athletes, considering that they usually have full-time jobs, maybe a family, and it's a very different situation? Usually they're not training for draft legal racing or the Olympic pathway. It's quite often long distance, or even if it's short distance, it's non-drafting. So do you have any specific things that you would advise age groupers to do to train better, become better athletes?
It's a limitation. I understand that, but I still would say try to get those small session in, like 30 minutes. If you have a solid framework, try to get 30 minutes run or 30 minute bike, so you do more frequent training. Because if you do that every week, you will end up with more base in the end.
Yeah. And what if you are somebody that, because we do have a lot of listeners that do train quite a lot, say 10 to 15 hours, even more, of course, but I think 10 hours is quite normal for a lot of athletes to get in. Do you have anything that you would say that you would advise differently compared to what you have described that you do with the youth athletes, considering that they're maybe training for, let's say, a half distance triathlon?
Not really. Maybe that's a generalization, but I tend to see that age groupers do the slow a little bit too hard, and then the hard, of course, going to be you take the edge off that. So like I said to my youth and juniors, when it's easy, and when we go medium and hard, we go medium and hard. So and keep to the schedule, so you don't, even if they are age groupers, they're still kind of maybe playing around on the training and competing against their training buddies. I don't know. That's how I see it sometimes. And then you need to be aware of that. So you really do easy when you're easy, and do the threshold. That's also like a medium cannot go too hard, because then it's not developing the threshold or that thing. It's only when you go a little bit harder, you can let it flow, so to speak, I think. Yeah, but that should still be quite a small amount if you're doing longer races. So you need to keep discipline in the medium and the easy. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good point there about the medium often being something that people might overestimate how hard they should go there. Mm. And it's something that we have talked about quite a bit on the podcast in the past as well. Well, one question actually that I don't have on our list, but I'm quite curious, how have your athletes handled this year, the lack of racing and still uncertainty that surrounds the coming year? How are they dealing with it from a motivational perspective?
We just had our yearly review here, and we had these two questions on this review, because like you said, it's good, a good learning to know what they think about it, and it's a, what you say, double-edged sword. They have learned to see that long blocks on training, uninterrupted training, is very good from them. They don't go travel, so they just stay at one place and training. That's also good for them. But also being more flexible, because, there can be a race in 2 weeks and it's not cancelled yet. But 1 week before, not 1 week, but 2 or 3 weeks before, they cancel it. And we just need to accept that. And on the other side, of course, they miss racing, some athletes more than others. But I think we solved it quite good with we still could do some running races and small swim races. The only thing we heard from that is we haven't been doing triathlon. And I agree, we miss triathlon.
Yeah. Do you have anything that you advise the athletes that might suffer the most from not being able to do triathlon racing, that might really suffer from a motivational perspective? What do you say to those athletes, or what do you advise them to do?
Now we talk about it. and trying to get a perspective on it. They are still young, so they need, if their intention is to be good as older athletes, they need to keep going because of that. Hopefully Corona will not be so far away to go away. So that's been a good point for working with younger athletes. Then I can see that if you're at the end of your cycle, like it was your last Olympics and it got moved to another year, that must be a different story.
Yeah. And one final question. What do you think about the state of triathlon in Sweden, especially, but also in the Nordics in general? Where is it in its development? Do you see it as having progressed in the last 5 to 10 years? And where do you see it going? What is the growth potential there? And I'm asking here specifically from an elite triathlon perspective. So like talking about the Olympic pathway in particular, but also if you want to comment on the long distance scene, then by all means you can do that as well.
What I see from my perspective, I mean, Norway is clearly leading the way with Arild and Gustav and Christian and Kasper and Lotte doing a tremendous job there. I mean, they have taken those athletes to the top. So they're doing something very good. And from a youth perspective, I see that Denmark is doing a very good job. They have, what I can see, very many youth on their competitions. And in Sweden and Finland, I don't see so much, unfortunately. So I hope we can learn from Denmark and Norway when they are so close.
Mm. Do you think that the reason that Sweden and Finland might be behind is more of a setup problem, that the setup is not right, so the talent that exists there is not developed as it should? Or is it more of a culture thing that maybe triathlon has a bigger foothold in Denmark, for example, because Denmark is a bit closer to Central Europe and the climate is a bit more conducive for for triathlon, that there actually is just a bigger pool of talent to choose from there because more people get into triathlon, the same way that Sweden and Norway have a massive pool of cross-country skiing talent that might not exist in other countries just because of the culture?
You can only speculate, but I mean, the hard work Arild has done with that group is amazing. I think, of course, he has a team, but he for sure been one of the most driven coaches, and also have been let to do what his vision is. In Denmark, I don't know, but they have some good success with Schilling and Rasmus Henning and the other girls on the long distance. And as you say, they're closer to Europe. They are a really good cycling culture, good in swimming as well. If that's maybe have helped them. In Sweden, we have Lisa Nordén. And I think that helped. But that was some 8 years ago now. And to some extent, it had helped, but not in the same way as Denmark and Norway. And for Finland, I'm not really sure. No.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I think that Finland lacks both. To be honest, I don't think Finland has a good setup, but I also think that triathlon is just not at all ingrained in the culture there. So not in the youth anyway. It's not a sport that really is even seen as an option for most young athletes to get into. But again, I don't live in Finland anymore. I haven't done that for 3 years. So it's speculation on my part, but that's what I felt like at least when I was living there.
Yeah, I think you need good leaders like Arild taking some initiative and pushing it. I'm sure Denmark has that too, in the club environment and different. As I say, I can only speculate, but I think that. So and then you connect to the athletes and they keep coming back, and then you get some kind of like stars like Christian and Lotte and Gustav and Kasper, and they draw attention and youth to the sport. Like the swimming in Sweden is big with Sara Sjöström and the other really good swimming girls there. So
yeah, certainly. Well, let's move on to the rapid fire questions. So take just one sentence to answer each of these. And the first one is, what is your favorite book, blog, or resource related to triathlon or endurance sports?
I really love books and pods, but my favorite resource is my athletes and colleagues and my mentors. That's where I see the most gain, yeah.
And what's your favorite piece of gear or equipment?
I would say my mountain bike.
And what's a personal habit that's helped you achieve success?
I'm very keen on looking for commonalities in what the best do, I think.
And what do you think? Can you give one example in triathlon?
What the best do?
Yeah.
They enjoy what they do. They really like training, and they believe in themselves that they the athletes can believe that they can do it. And for training, it in very much consistency.
Finally. So for athletes, especially those in Sweden, but as we heard, you have had people like Vasco come to your program. So where can they find more information about that?
We have the school has an Instagram konto, so it's Rig Triathlon. We're trying to update that with just some training pictures and stuff.
That's RIG. Triathlon.
Yeah, and then we have some like I'm on Instagram as well, Joakim Villén, and on Twitter as well. Yeah,
right. Perfect. Thank you so much, Joakim, for taking the time to come on and do this interview. It was a pleasure to chat.
Thank you very much, Michael. It was a pleasure to be here.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Joakim. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com. Stay tuned for Thursday when we have another Q&A coming out. And then next Monday, I interview Robert Gorgos, who is the nutritionist of the Båda Hansgrohe World Tour cycling team, with plenty of interesting discussions around how World Tour cyclists fuel, what their nutrition is like, and so on, from somebody who is in the trenches with that day in and day out. If you're looking for training plans or coaching for 2021, then I would highly recommend that you check out what we have to offer on scientifictriathlon.com. I would suggest that it's very, very good quality and that you won't be disappointed. We have a lot of information available on the website, and if you need more or want to discuss things, then just contact me on michael@scientifictriathlon.com, and that's Michael with a K. Big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Hydration, you can find on precisionhydration.com. Go and get a free hydration plan and find out your individual sweat sodium concentration level, and get 15% off your electrolyte products with the promo code DETTRIATHLONSHOW15. And thank you to Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Go and check out their wetsuits, dry suits, swimskins, goggles, high-performance eyewear, and prescription glasses and sunglasses. If you're looking to upgrade your equipment setup for 2021, one of the best things that you can invest in would be something like a really good wetsuit or dry suit. Those are both pieces of equipment that can make a huge difference, and Roka's offerings there are really superb, so I highly recommend you check them out. And you can get 20% off your order with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart. Keep loving triathlon.